Mr. Azhar Raja, an experienced life science educator at Ahmed Timol Secondary School, joins us on the learning curve. Let's welcome him onto Radio Islam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mr. Raja.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Jazakallah for your time on Radio Islam International. We really appreciate it, and inshallah, we hope that this is going to be a fruitful hour as well as discussion.
Inshallah.
Jazakallah for your time. Okay, we're going to go straight into it. Mr. Azhar Raja, tell us, when it comes to life sciences as a subject in school, is it important to understand structures as well as functions and how they interlink?
Definitely. I'd say it's approximately 30 to 40% of an exam paper, depending on which sections are being tested. A learner can get that many marks just from knowing the structure and function. And that's why I suggest that learners redraw the diagrams from the textbook, and then they should label them and then annotate it with a function. And if they've got that basic knowledge, you'll find that in multiple choice questions, in terminology, question 2 and 3, it's frequent for them to give you a diagram, ask you for the labels, ask you for the functions. Sometimes even the essay, if it's on a process and if you know the diagram of the process and you go through it step by step, you can get many marks from that as well.
Brother Azhar, you know, if you look at our schooling subjects, a lot of times we tend to understand that from one subject to the next, it is different in terms of swatting and understanding. And learners do not know whether they should be doing life sciences because, you know, some of them are good at swatting, whereas others understand things better and that's the way they remember it. Would you say that life science can be considered as a swatting subject?
The short answer would be no. There is certain things like the terminology where you'd have to learn that off the heart, basically. But if you look at a paper that's set well, there's something called a Bloom's taxonomy.
Correct.
So based on that, 40% of the paper will be trace recall things from the textbook.
True.
25% will be understanding. 20% will be application of your knowledge. And 15% will be on analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. So if you don't understand the work, you're not going to get a good mark. You might just scrape through the subject, but you need to work on understanding. That's the only way you're going to get good marks in the subject.
Yeah, I think that's really on point there. You know, when we said, okay, life sciences is not regarded as a swatting subject, but a subject where an individual, where a learner, a student needs to learn to understand it. Sometimes maybe a school doesn't provide another subject and life sciences is one of the subjects which is compulsory through any course that you choose. For example, you choose S7 or S1 or all the different ones. What strategies can a learner use to maybe study life sciences so that it's easy for them to understand the different structures and functions of organisms?
I think the method that most learners find to be the most beneficial, especially in matric, but even in other grades, is to use past papers. But before you get to the past paper, I think you first need to go through your work, make summaries. You can see what works for you, mind maps or tables or diagrams, or even if it's flow charts or whatever, as long as you've got summaries, and then you go to the past papers. But again, the past papers, you know, you'll see that it's not just content. There's also specific skills that you need to know. Right? So the content is maybe like the terminology, but you need to know how to draw a graph. You need to know how to interpret graphs. There's the whole section on hypothesis testing. So you need to know what hypothesis testing entails. The most important things in hypothesis testing generally are the variables, the independent variables, the dependent variable, the control variable. You need to know the different statements in a hypothesis testing procedure. So you need to know there's an aim, there's a hypothesis, there's a conclusion. There's something called reliability and validity. Those are frequently tested in examination papers. So a learner needs to go through the content as well as know the skills, including things like calculations, etc.
And yesterday we actually had a physical science as well as chemistry educator, and he was telling us that when it comes to physics, practicals as well as theoretical knowledge is of importance. Do you feel it's the same when it comes to life sciences?
No, definitely. Hypothesis testing, as I was saying, that is basically the practical work. Right? So it's very important because one is going to be tested. In the past, grade 10 and 11 used to have a prac exam at the end of the year. But from this year, they've scrapped that. Right? Okay. So the result of them taking out that paper 3 means that every exam is going to have hypothesis testing questions within the exam now. Right? So it's very, very crucial that learners have to do these practicals, understand the processes, and you're going to find years where you can't SWAT a practical generally.
Correct.
That's where the understanding comes in, yes.
So it's basically part of the syllabus and it will remain there for now.
Definitely.
Okay, if you do have any questions, inshallah, with regards to life sciences, then you can WhatsApp us on 072-786-1548. And Mr. Azhar Raja, inshallah, will be answering all your life sciences-related queries for the FET phase. Okay, so as we're saying that you can send through your questions already, Mr. Raja, we have questions coming through. We're going to go through the first one that's coming through. Okay, it says... Assalamu alaikum. I'm actually studying when it comes towards the reproductive system. The question says, how does FSH and LH assist in the reproductive system? If Mr. Raja can please assist me.
Okay, right. So what the hormones, very important normally is to know where they come from. Right. So both FSH and LH come from the pituitary gland, firstly. Right. And then look at the name FSH. It's short for the word follicle stimulating hormone. So if you know that FSH stands for follicle stimulating hormone, then you already know the function, that the function of FSH, it will stimulate follicles to grow. Right. So
sure.
The first part would be to know the name FSH means follicle stimulating hormone. And if you know that that's what FSH stands for, you already know the function, which is to stimulate the follicles within the ovary to start to develop and grow. And then they asked about LH also, right? LH stands for luteinizing hormone. And luteinizing hormone, again, you don't need to write the whole name out. If you write LH alone, you can get the mark for that. It's an approved abbreviation. Okay. But the luteinizing hormone, basically in the menstrual cycle on day 14, it peaks. And the function of luteinizing hormone is that it will cause the process of ovulation. And then ovulation is defined as when the mature ovum is released from the follicle and it goes into the fallopian tube. And then the second function of LH after ovulation is that it causes the formation of the corpus luteum. Right? So within the ovary, the remaining follicle after the graafian follicle has gone through the process of ovulation, the empty follicle now will be converted into what we call a corpus luteum. So those are the... That's basically all you need to know about FSH and LH.
Jazakallah so much, Mr. Raja. Yeah, well, there's another question from one of the learners, and they're asking, how does the loop of Henle assist the nephron?
Okay, so the loop of Henle, the nephron section, it's good because this child is really ahead of the syllabus, right? We haven't covered that. It's not term one's work, right? But in the nephron, there's two main parts. There's the Malpighian body, and then there's the renal tubules. So when you're talking of the loop of Henle, this is part of the renal tubules. And the job of this is that a lot of reabsorption of water takes place here.
Right.
So if you look at the structure, it's called a loop of Henle because it's a loop shape. It goes down a long way. It's got what you call a descending limb going down. Then there's the loop of Henle, what you call a hairpin bend. So it bends, and then it goes up again in the ascending loop. Right, so this entire structure, it's got a very long structure, which increases the surface area. It allows maximum water to be reabsorbed from the kidney. So then, you know, too much water is not lost with urination, basically.
Okay, and a follow-up question to that. It says also, how will it be easy for me to not get confused when it comes towards the proximal convoluted tubule as well as the distal convoluted tubule?
Okay, so I think if you take the word proximal, it's close to the word approximate, right? And the proximity to the Malpighian body, right, which is the glomerulus and the Bowman's capsule.
Right.
Proximal convoluted tubule is the first one. The other name for it is the first, if you break it down, proximal convoluted tubule, proximal is like the first one. Convoluted means folded. Tubule, basically, right? So proximal means the proximity to the, what we call it, the Malpighian body.
Gee.
It's the first one. It's right near there. And then distal is like distant. It's far away. It's between, you're going to first have the Bowman's capsule, and then you're going to have the proximal convoluted tubule, then loop of Henle, then distal convoluted tubule towards the end.
Yep, I think inshallah that that should be answering the question for our listeners. Okay, so the time is just gone 22 minutes past the hour of 3. Another question coming through saying, Assalamu alaikum, how do we do a genetic cross for co-dominance? Now, I don't know, Mr. Raja, if you'll be able to explain the genetic cross easily over the air, but inshallah you can go ahead, it should assist them.
Okay, firstly, if it's co-dominance, remember that the format remains the same. So no matter which type of genetic cross you do, it's going to be for 6 or 7 marks. 2 marks is for the format. So that's compulsory. Every matric learner needs to know this off by heart, right? So that's basically to write P1, your phenotype, your genotype, meiosis, gametes, fertilization. You normally have a Punnett square, and then you'll have the F1 genotype and phenotype. Right? So that's the basic format where they'll get 2 marks for. Then if you're specifically talking about co-dominance, like co-dominance, it's going to be different from complete dominance in that the letters you use for the genotype, the alleles, are going to be 2 capital letters, right? So you're going to use 2 capital letters for the different alleles, but 2 different letters. So, for example, if you're talking maybe of a black sheep and a white sheep being crossed, and if it's co-dominant, then you can use the letter capital B for black and capital W for white. Right? Whereas if it was complete dominance, you'll use a capital and a small letter. So here, the important thing to do is that you're going to use capital letters. So for black, will be capital B, capital P. And for white, will be capital W, capital W. And then you'll do your whole cross, and you'll find that 100% of the offspring will be maybe capital B and capital W, which will give you offspring. Now, because it's co-dominant, none of them is completely dominant. So because both are equally dominant, you're going to see both characteristics in the phenotype. So the phenotype will be black and white together in that case.
Okay, and the same person is asking, could it be when we mention the phenotype or the genotype, can we mention that it would be gray in color?
Gray would be not when you're talking of co-dominance, if you're talking of incomplete dominance.
Okay.
Right? So the difference being that in co-dominance is when both of the alleles are dominant. Incomplete dominant, none of them are dominant. But you're going to answer it the same way. You're going to use, again, 2 capital letters for incomplete dominance. But with incomplete dominance, because none of them are dominant, the rule of Mendel is that the dominant allele shows in the phenotype. So here, none of them are dominant, none of them show. You won't have black and you won't have white if it's heterozygous offspring. You're going to have a new color, and you say an intermediate color, meaning something in between. So you're going to get gray. That's for incomplete, not for co-dominant.
Okay, Jazakallah for that. Another question coming through?
Mr. Raja, this question asks, how does one answer an essay question in life science paper? What should the focus be put on? You know, if you look at it, when it comes to life science, answering these types of essay questions are quite different from a history essay question or a business studies questions. So this learner wants to know what should the focus be put on?
Okay, right. So with an essay, the one thing to note that the grade 10 and 11 learners from this year, they're not writing essays any longer. Right?
Okay.
So this will apply to grade 12 learners for now.
Okay.
So the first thing is, it's going to be a very short sentence, but it's going to be counting you 20 marks. That question might be 3 or 4 lines, but it counts a lot of marks. Right. So the first thing would be read the question thoroughly. You don't want to miss out something, or you don't want to go off topic. Right. So read the question, even if it's 2 or 3 times. The second time you're reading it, underline the verbs. Right? So things like describe, explain, state, give examples. Those are the verbs that are of what's required from you in the question. Whatever comes after the verb, that's what you need to speak about. So sometimes there'll be a leading statement in the start just to give you a context. But that's not the question yet. Once it says describe or explain, that's where the question really starts now. Right? And then after you've done that, what you should do is try and get subheadings. Okay, so there's no subheading, there's no marks for the subheadings, but the subheadings are very important for the way you structure your essay. Right? So you're going to try and get, normally you get 2 or 3 subheadings, and then you can do a bit of planning and you'll have your points under each one of them. But with the matric marking, we don't penalize you for writing in a paragraph or not writing in a paragraph format.
Okay.
So even if you write in a bullet form, it's acceptable. But the idea is that it needs to be full sentences. You can't just have phrases or words there. Okay, even if you look at the memos of past papers, you'll find that the memos are also written in bullet form. So I recommend that, okay, firstly, you're going to read the question, get your verbs, and then you're going to get subheadings. And under each of the subheadings, write what is relevant in that subheading, and you can even do that in bullet form. And then in the end, when you're done with your paper, as you spoke about business studies essays, and one of the things we find, especially when learners start in grade 10 when they were doing essays, is they like to start with an introduction and a conclusion. Correct. There's no marks for that. Actually, you're going to be wasting your time. Because the question says, describe transcription, then some learners say, I am about to write an essay to describe the process. And then when they're done, they say, I have just written an essay. So there's no introduction or conclusion here. Right, that's one thing. And then we should also understand that the 20 marks for the essay, 17 marks are for content, and 3 marks are for what we call synthesis. Now, again, synthesis is not something that you need to write about. Some learners put the subheading synthesis and write something. The synthesis means how did you make up your essay? And there's 3 criteria in synthesis. The one is relevance. Is everything that you said there relevant to the topic? So you can have 30 points that are relevant and one word that is off the topic or one point that is off the topic, you're going to lose the mark for relevance. Right? Then L is for logic, meaning the sequence of events. So if you're talking of something like mitosis or meiosis, it has to go from the right stage to the next stage, to the next stage. You can't mix the stages up. Yeah. So word that there, the logic mark is for the sequence of events, and do you have the correct cause and effect relationship shown? And then the third mark is C for comprehensiveness. Have you answered all aspects of the question? And that's why I said if you have subheadings, you're going to answer all of the aspects. You're going to get a comprehensive mark. And if you have a subheading, normally you won't write something off that topic if you've got that subheading. So that will also keep you relevant. So I strongly suggest that they use subheadings when answering an essay question.
Yep, and just one more point, I think, on the person's asking. Normally, they say that marks will not be awarded for diagrams as well as flowcharts. Yes. If we do it in that manner when it comes to matric marking, will they give us the benefit of the doubt?
No. They can cancel the whole thing and give you zero, or if it's a person who's maybe a bit lenient, they might divide it by two, and you're going to get much lower mark than what you would have if you wrote it. If you can't be lazy to write sentences, okay, paragraph, it's fine. But if you're lazy to write paragraphs, but bullet form, that's the minimum that we want. Right? So you can have bullets, but full sentences. And don't try and be fancy. What you find also with some learners, they try and show their language and use very extreme language and words that are confusing. In the end, it changes the meaning and you end up losing marks. So don't try and impress the marker with fancy language. Keep it simple and stick to the content. We're just looking for the content that's there.
Okay, there's quite a bit of messages coming through, Mr. Raja. We'll try and, inshallah, go through most of them after the break, inshallah. Some of them are quite lengthy answers, I suppose, and we're going to come back to it. The time has just gone 30 minutes past the hour of 3. It is a learning curve on Radio Islam International. Today, we're going through the life sciences subject. So if you do have any questions, inshallah, then you can WhatsApp us on 072-786-1548. We have Mr. Azhar Raja from the Ahmed Timur Secondary School, who's answering your questions. Stay tuned. We've got Mr. Azhar Raja on the line, and he's a life sciences educator at the Ahmed Timur Secondary School. If you do have any questions, you might be working through past papers, you might be revising at this moment during the lockdown. If you have any questions, maybe you might be a bit confused with, then you can WhatsApp us on 072-786-1548. A message coming through here saying, Assalamu alaikum. Can you please ask Mr. Raja to explain the menstrual cycle and the difference between it with the ovarian cycle?
Okay. That's a long question.
Yeah.
Okay, I think firstly the question is, you can't give a difference between menstrual cycle and the ovarian cycle, right? What you need to understand is that the menstrual cycle itself is made up of two different cycles, namely the ovarian cycle and the uterine cycle. Right. So when you talk of the menstrual cycle, many learners get confused and they talk of menstruation. Menstruation is not the menstrual cycle. That's maybe 5 out of 28 days.
True.
Right. So when you talk of the menstrual cycle itself, from a life science perspective, you're going to find that there's a graph that's common. It's in the Minor Guest Study Guide. It's in most textbooks where it's got the days on the x-axis, and it's got the uterine cycle, what's happening in the uterus. You'll find it starts with menstruation, shedding of the uterus, and then it slowly increases, etc. Then it's got the ovarian cycle, which is showing in the ovary how the follicles are growing. And then it's got the levels of LH and FSH, and it's got the levels of estrogen and progesterone. Those are the the four hormones that affect the menstrual cycle. Mm. So there's a lot of interaction between them. You're going to find that the ovarian cycle releases two hormones, namely estrogen and progesterone, and those two hormones are what affect the uterine cycle. It's, I don't know, do you want me to go through the whole thing? Because it's going to be maybe 10 minutes that.
Okay, so maybe what we can do is we can keep that for next week, inshallah, for that full explanation. Maybe okay. We can go through some of the short questions so we get that out of the way. One coming through here saying, please advise how to score points in practical exams.
Okay, the good thing is you don't have to score points in practical exams anymore because they canceled from this year, right? So, it used to be... something that was happening at the end of the year, paper three, but with the amended caps, they've cancelled that for now. But it's still going to be there in the form of not a practical where you're going to actually do things. It's going to be part of the exam paper itself, but there still will be practicals themselves. Right. So for the practicals themselves, which will happen in a different term, you need to know your, as I said, the hypothesis testing skills.
Okay.
Right. Can I give my website address?
That's fine.
So I've got a website. It's www.bioats.weebly. That's www.weebly.com. Right. So if you go there, I've got a lot of resources. Even that person was asking about the menstrual cycle. I've got PowerPoint presentations from grade 10 to grade 12 for every topic. You can go there and go through the slides and maybe you will get a better understanding of that as well. There's the Mind the Gap study guide is there. The exam guidelines are there for the matriculants. There's past papers, etc. So I was saying on here, if you go to this website, there's one section where it says grades, and there's grade 10, 11, and 12. And then underneath that, there's something that says general resources. So when you go by general resources, which are applicable to any grade, you'll get there's a PowerPoint presentation there on hypothesis testing. So you can go through that. It takes you through all the important aspects of a practical, meaning knowing what the variables are, how to write a hypothesis, aim. There's things about the results as well, as in a conclusion. So you can go through that as a starting point. Mm.
Okay, so the website again, it's www.bioats.weebly.com. And yes, that's Mr. Raja telling us that there's all types of resources that are on there from grade 10 to 12. Inshallah, it will assist you with the life sciences subject. Another question coming through.
Please explain the steps of the meiosis, as these steps are quite confusing.
Okay, the steps of meiosis, again, it's a whole process on its own, right? And meiosis, it's important that we know meiosis because meiosis is a topic which will come in paper one and paper two. It's the only topic which is found in paper one and paper two. And it's about 11 marks in each. Total is 23 marks. It's 11 in one and 12 in another one. So it's a lot of marks there, and you can benefit in paper one and paper two. Okay. With meiosis, again, you're going to need to know the shorthanded IP map, right? Interphase, prophase, metaphase, anaphase, telophase. And so it's going to start off with interphase. During interphase, again, if I have to go through the whole process, this is like something that takes 1 week in to do, right? So we're not going to finish. I'm just going to summarize it.
That's fine.
That interphase, the most important thing is that DNA replication happens there. Mm. And then... after interphase, there's only one interphase. Every other phase, you can never just say a phase name in grade 12. You have to say either prophase 1 or 2, metaphase 1 or 2. Okay. Right? So after interphase, we're going to have prophase 1. During prophase 1, the chromosomes are now arranged in homologous pairs. Okay, so there's going to be homo, meaning the same. They are the same size, the same shape, the same centromere position. They have the same alleles for the same gene. It doesn't have to be the same allele, but the same gene are going to be in the same position. The most important thing about prophase one is that the process of crossing over happens, right? And you can read up about crossing over. You need to know it can be asked for 5 or 6 months. What is crossing over itself, right? And then you go to metaphase one after prophase one. During metaphase one, we've got these homologous chromosomes, M for metaphase, M for middle. You're going to find that all of the chromosomes are arranged in the middle in the homologous pairs during metaphase one. Anaphase 1, A for anaphase, A for away. now you're going to have those spindle fibers contracting, and you're going to find that those chromosomes are going to move away from each other. It's full chromosome. So that X-shaped chromosome, we call that a replicated chromosome. Right. Because initially in interphase, you would have had basically what we call chromatids. And then due to DNA replication, you've got now a full chromosome with two chromatids. The second chromatid is a copy of the first one, right? That's before crossing over.
Sure.
So we said in anaphase one, we're going to have these replicated full X-shaped chromosomes moving away from each other. Then you get to telophase one. T is for two. One cell becomes two. So that one cell that you had now splits into two. And from telophase one, one very important thing is that telophase one is the phase from which change from diploid to haploid, meaning that the chromosome number is now half of the initial one.
Okay.
And then we said it was IPMAT, then you're going to start again with PMAT because interphase is only one. Right? So after telophase one, you go now to prophase two. Remember, meiosis is has two stages. There's two nuclear divisions. So after the first division, now we go to the second stage. In prophase two, it's similar to prophase one. The difference is that the chromosomes are not going to be in homologous pairs, and they are not going to be any crossing over. There's no crossing over during prophase two.
Okay.
Then in metaphase two, again, metaphase M for middle, these chromosomes are arranged in the middle, but the difference is in metaphase one, they were in homologous pairs. Metaphase two, you're going to have chromosomes arranged singly or individually. And then anaphase two, again, A for away, your spindle fibers will contract. But the difference here from anaphase one is that when they contract, they're going to break that chromosome, that replicated chromosome at the centromere. And now you're going to have what were the chromatids, but now we call them unreplicated chromosomes moving to the side. So it's not an X-shaped chromosome. It's a single strand, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to telophase two, now you've got each of those two cells that were made in telophase one splitting into two again. So you've got four cells formed. They are haploid. They are different from each other. One important process that I missed is that during metaphase one and metaphase two, we find that an important process called random arrangement occurs. Right? And random arrangement along with crossing over is what results in genetic variation. So that's a basic summary of it.
Jazakallah for that. And yes, I hope that individual or that learner has taken it down even briefly. And from then onwards, inshallah, they can read up more about it with the notes as well. A message coming through saying, Assalamu alaikum to grade 10 and 11, still have to write essays. The answer that was given by Mr. Azhar Raja is no. From this year onwards, it has been phased out. So only matriculants are writing. Is that correct?
Yes, 100%. It's called an amended CAPS.
Amended CAPS.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. So that answered that question. Mr. Raja, unfortunately, we've run out of time for this segment, but quite a bit of messages coming through from your students as well as our listeners. But what we'll do is we'll take it over, inshallah, to next week, Wednesday, when we have the life sciences segment again. Jazakallah so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And we hope to, inshallah, chat with you soon.
I look forward to it also.
Jazakallah. Assalamu alaikum.
Waalaikumsalam.
That was Mr. Azhar Raja from the Ahmed Timol Secondary School. And yes, he was doing the life sciences subject tuition on air this afternoon. And remember that we do another lesson of that subject in the next week on the same day. So, for example, today we did life sciences. Next week, Wednesday, inshallah, we'll be doing life sciences once again. Yes, Jazakallah for all the messages that are coming through of support. We really appreciate it. And yes, we hope that our learners are sitting with their pens as well as their books, taking down the notes, and it will be beneficial for one and all, inshallah. The time has just gone 3:43 p.m. When we come back, inshallah, after this break, it goes to the career guidance slot. And this time around, we're going to be having Hafiz Osama Darabai. He's going to be telling us more about pharmacy. Stay tuned. It's on air school tuition as well as the learning curve on Radio Islam International. And yes, we come to the career guidance slot. And as you've heard, or if you've been following us for the past few days, we've had a civil engineer as well as someone that has studied medicine. Today on the line, we've got Hafiz Osama Darabai, and he's a pharmacist at the moment doing his comm service at Clix. Hafiz Sab joins us on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Hafiz Osama.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullah. You are Hafiz, teacher no one.
Alhamdulillah, I'm well. If you are well, how is it being a healthcare worker before we even go ahead in this lockdown period?
Alhamdulillah, shukr. You know, the last it has been spoken on Radio Islam, I think, when I was singing on the Nazm Hour. Shukr, alhamdulillah, on this side of Clix, very busy. I'm actually in Clix Trade Route Mall. The mall is extremely busy. Boxer, Game, and there's other supermarkets that are open. The pharmacy is also crazy busy.
Yeah, I see. At least we got some time out of your busy schedule. Avisa, without any further ado, tell us quickly a brief description of what pharmacy is about for someone that's planning on studying, someone that doesn't know what they want to do, but they've heard about pharmacy. Tell us a brief description, the different components.
Okay, so pharmacy, people will think pharmacists are glorified shopkeepers. Definitely we are not. We're not just legal drug dealers. Pharmacy as a retailer in a click store, in a community pharmacy, to me, it really gives great satisfaction. You know, when you're giving a person free advice, they come up to you, you are the first point of contact. A person is feeling ill, he has a flu, or he feels maybe he has a coronavirus. The first point of contact, you're going to be speaking to him. You're going to be giving him advice. And it gives you real happiness to see. Sometimes the patient will return to the pharmacy and they'll thank you and they'll say, you know what, that medication that you gave me or that advice that you told me about, you know, it really helped me. And sometimes you forget about the patient. You forgot the person's name. You forget their face also. Mm. And you can't even remember that you actually gave them some advice, but they really appreciate it. And then that gives real happiness that pharmacy is not just about selling medication, not just about sales, but also giving patients advice and trying to help them, because definitely at the end of the day, shifa and cure is in Allah's hands, and you don't know which medication, behind which medication Allah has put the cure for that disease or whatever sickness a person is facing.
Okay, and as you've mentioned that maybe you might be, for example, working at a pharmacy, but a person who studies the bachelor's degree of pharmacy, can they work actually in a pharmaceutical company that manufactures the medicine?
So it's actually a 4-year honors degree. Thereafter, you complete 1 year of internship and 1 year of community service. During your internship, already you are allowed to do your internship in any manufacturing firm. Example, I did mine in PTEP, Sun Pharma. It was very exciting. It's a lot of it is a place actually where you put your theory into practice. And I would advise students who would like to study pharmacy that they go and job shadow at these pharmacy practices, at these manufacturing institutions, because one is to learn the theory and to swat it off how the manufacturing process occurs. But when you see it actually in reality, it actually really makes sense, and it becomes much easier when you're studying as well.
Hafizab, can you tell us, you know, for a learner that's currently in grade 8 and 9 and one day decides to study this career, what are some of the subject choices they need to make, and also what is the admission requirement at the university level?
Okay, so every year the admission requirements do change, but when I applied, there was also a very big change. So previously there was a lot of community service work that was required as a score that would build up against your name, and then they would decide on who did more community service, who shadowed more. The process has changed quite a bit now. They don't consider much of your community service, but a lot score counts is your grade 11 results. Mm-hmm. So I would advise them that pay particular attention to your grade 11, especially at the end of the year, because that is the result that you will be applying with. Subject choices, I would say to go with the S7 course, which is definitely pure math, then science, and then life sciences or bio, which is a must when you're going into the healthcare field. The other subjects don't really matter. If you're doing any additional subjects, your score just increases. Sometimes a person might get 7 A's, but you still have difficulty to get accepted for these degrees because there's a lot of competition. A lot of people are applying for it, and obviously with the highest marks or the highest scores, those people stand a better chance of acceptance.
Very true.
Yes, and Hafizab, you know, for someone that's still in school, you would ask them, what do you want to become? And then they would say pharmacist. But in true reality, what's the workload like when it comes to your university life, when it's your studying life? Is it quite hectic? And is it like a lot of hours that you need to push in? And it's not something that's going to be by the way? And does it branch also into a bit of medicine where you need to study, as we heard yesterday, like anatomy and all the different structures of the body?
Okay, good question there. I would suggest that you would job shadow and see what work are you actually going to be doing when you qualify. It's not just what you feel a pharmacist does or any profession for that matter. You need to see what work are you going to do when you qualify and will you enjoy doing that work. For example, retail, it might extend over to the hours of the weekend. If you're industry manufacturing, you might only work Monday to Friday. Your hours would be less. In the retail, it's much more patient-orientated. You have to be a people's person. You have to deal with the mood swing. Someone's been in the queue for a very long time, and they come there. They're not upset with you, but they were just upset about standing in the queue, and then you have to deal with that. So obviously, you have to be happy with what you're going to do. In terms of the calls, the first year isn't very intense, even though we do some accounting, but it's not very taxing. In second year, the anatomy and physiology, I myself had a very, very difficult time.
Gee.
But once you overcome the second year of pharmacy, I think in third year, you'll start enjoying pharmacy if it's meant for you, because you are now studying more of the pharmacy-related subjects. You would start working on weekends, sometimes for pay, sometimes you have to work for free. But that experience, that exposure, which is compulsory to do a certain amount of hours, it also helps with your theory. And from third year, when you start enjoying the subjects, then you know what pharmacy is for you.
And when it comes to admission requirements, would you perhaps maybe be able to assist us, maybe which universities do provide the pharmacy course? I understand WITS is one. Which other ones do you know or are you aware of that you can maybe inform our listeners?
So WITS University, then there's one in Porch as well. There's one in Western Cape as well. There's one in Pretoria as well. I know UJ doesn't offer, but they would offer podiatry or optometry, which WITS doesn't offer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would like to study, WITS is world recognized, and if somebody has to do a job interview with you and in your CV, if you have come from WITS University,
sure,
it does hold a very high record. And even when you're doing your internship, when you're applying for your internship, if you're coming from WITS University, they do have a higher regard for you. Your internship you could do in retail or in industry. And then if you would like to do your master's, then it's another 2 years, which counts as academic internship. And thereafter, you do your one-year community service, which I am currently doing.
Okay. And if someone's pushing to get into pharmacy, but maybe due to the results or with the numbers that are only allowed to go into a specific field, is there maybe a branching course that can take them into pharmacy if they really want to do it?
So definitely you shouldn't give up. Whatever you pursue, whatever you feel your heart's desire is to become, remember what the ultimate goal would be: to serve mankind, to serve humanity, to benefit other people, not only looking at salary or ulterior motives. There's many people who studied BSc and they studied many other courses before they got into pharmacy. So if you're studying any other degree, after you complete the degree, you are allowed to apply for pharmacy. You don't gain any years, but if there are any subjects, for example, life sciences or chemistry or any of those subjects which we have completed in another course, you will get credits for those, and then you will be exempted from writing those exams.
Officer, just on the lighter side, studying at WITS, does that mean a higher pay or higher salary?
As it is world-renowned.
Definitely not. In terms of internship, if you're doing it in government, across the country, the pay would be the same.
Okay.
If you're doing it in a private institution, obviously it will be according to what they would deem suitable for you, but it doesn't change depending on which university you came from.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that some manufacturing companies or, for example, Clicks has an affiliation with the government.
Okay.
So depending on which university you came from, if they have any clause or any contract with that company, you would stand a higher chance. So even those that would have bursaries during their studies, for example, if you had a bursary from Clicks or Dischem, you would stand a higher chance to first complete your internship at Dischem or Clicks. And sometimes people would feel that, you know what, they're going to be held up and they won't be free to pursue whichever direction they would like. But internship itself is difficult to get a post. And if you were doing your studies through a bursary, you actually stand a better chance of getting your internship completed.
Okay, I think we're done with that talk of studying and that. Let's talk money now, Hafiz Usama. Tell us, what's the average salary like for someone that wants to get into pharmacy? We know when you do a course, you don't do it for the money, but rather for the passion. But then again,
definitely,
the talk does come in. What's the money like?
Especially when you get married, then you know what we're talking about. So last year, the internship was around plus minus 20,000. Some would pay up to 23,000, obviously, after tax.
Okay.
This year, things have drastically changed. Internship at Netcare, they've increased the amount of positions available to accommodate everybody, but
okay,
it has actually halved. So there's an internship, they're paying about 10,000.
Sure.
Community service, it's plus minus 30,000. and they after around 34,000-35,000.
Okay, and so that's the private one. What would it be at a government baby pharmacy?
Government, you get extra perks. Your hours are much better. You start from 8:30 to 4:00. You work Monday to Friday. If you're working weekends, you'll get overtime. It's about 3,000 or 4,000 rand more compared to the private.
Okay, so we can work on an average of about, say, 23,000.
You can work on plus minus 23. But this year, the Netcare, I think they've taken most of it because of the high demand. They've taken most of it. And people just have to complete the internship. I mean, if you want to progress and you want to get done, you cannot practice as a pharmacist until you complete your internship in your community service.
Afsab, you know, some of the students, after listening to the pay, would definitely want to consider this career. But the question is, what's the scope? You know, is there demand for pharmacists?
The demand is very high, but people don't have money to pay. To be honest, you can see in a situation that South Africa is in, all healthcare professionals are in the high demand. They require people. There's actually posts that are opening up now for emergency during this lockdown period for pharmacists as well. The scope is very high in manufacturing. You might be earning very little bit initially because there's quite a bit to learn. But as you build your way up and as you climb, you will earn better. But the scope is there. I think in the healthcare field, regardless of whether it's a doctor or whether it's a pharmacist, there is a very high scope because it's also very broad. It's not limited just to retail pharmacies standing behind the counter dispensing medication. You also have your hospital pharmacies where you prepare the medication for the patients, but you don't meet with them, you don't interact with them at all. In the industrial field, you have those innovator companies where they're manufacturing from scratch, where they're doing all the research and they're making new products. And then you would have your generic companies who basically wait for the trademark to expire, and thereafter they come in with their generic products, which isn't so much of research and development, but also very interesting.
Really interesting indeed. Hafiz Usama Dadabai, quickly, just quick question. Is there any post that's open at Click Straight Road Mall?
There's a post for someone to come and pay us extra for the lockdown.
Yeah, maybe we'll get some guys to come in there. Jazakallah so much. We had so many more questions
so
to ask you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Inshallah, we hope to speak to you very soon.
Jazakallah.
Assalamu alaikum. That was Hafiz Usama Dadabai joining us on Radio Islam International, The Learning Curve, on the segment called Career Guidance. And he's a pharmacist. At the moment, he's working at, for Clicks, and alhamdulillah, he's given us some very pertinent information and some insightful stuff there, Hafiz Anzala. It's been awesome being in your company on the learning curve. Inshallah, we hope to be with you tomorrow. Just a reminder, tomorrow we're going to be doing geography, inshallah, for the FET phase, and we're going to be having an expert coming in as well. And when it comes to career guidance, we're going to be speaking to someone that's in the dentistry field, inshallah. So something to look forward to. For myself, Doman Panchbhai, Hafiz Anzala, FET, as well as Brother Ziyad, till tomorrow, 3 to 4 p.m. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.